This is such a great church growth text, isn't it? Inviting people, join this community. We want you to hate all your relatives, your family, and give up everything you have. I want to do two things with this text as we grapple with its harshness. It sounds, I think, harsh in one way, and I'd like it still to be a challenging text when I finish, but maybe not harsh in quite the way that it sounds on first listen. And I want to do that first by thinking about the context of the passage in Luke's gospel, and then secondly, some of the words, the specific words that are in the text. Sort of a couple of literary examinations. So in terms of context, Luke positions Jesus in this story as responding not to a smaller group of disciples, but to large crowds who are following him. So I first of all think, okay, what has Jesus been up to? And he's been doing a lot of healings. In fact, just a little bit before this, he was in the synagogue and on a occasion, and a woman who had been bent over for many years comes in, and in the encounter with her, she's healed and can stand up straight. So I'm just thinking about all these people following him and the possibility that they want something from him. They've heard his reputation for changing people's circumstances, their lives. And so I just wonder about that. I wonder who they are, what they want, why they're following. And then secondly, this right after this is Luke chapter 15. And something really important happens in that chapter. And I think it's very related to making sense of this text, because in Luke 15, there's three stories that lay out how God envisions how things should be. And the first story is of the lost sheep. 99 are in the fold, and one isn't there. And the shepherd goes out looking for them, that one. And then the lost coin, and the woman sweeps her whole house looking for the one lost coin. And then the third story, the one that everyone knows, is the story of the lost son and the rejoicing of the father when the son returns. And that's simplifying the story somewhat, but that thread of God saying, no, not one gets left aside. It's not okay if one is excluded. It's not okay if one is discarded. Nobody is disposable in God's imagination about this world that God created. So I think that context helps make sense of this, because I read this story in context as Jesus saying to these crowds following him, are you really ready for what's coming? Do you see what following me is all about? And the way in which that really comes home, I think, is the passage where he says, whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. The word hate actually in Greek can have two meanings, and I don't think hate is the best translation. It's misleading for us in English. And one of the translations of the Greek word in English is, can't be just summarized in one word, but it basically means privileging this over that. It doesn't carry the weight of what we consider to be hate, which is such a strong sort of relational, emotional word. It's rather about priorities. And Jesus basically is saying, if you're following me, are you willing to prioritize this way of living as God's own people over these other relationships? Because you may lose those. And so I think that sets up him saying this thing about the cross, and it's really evoking Pax Romana. Like, the Roman Empire kept peace by public execution. I was thinking about The Handmaid's Tale, and the way that the public hangings function in The Handmaid's Tale, if anyone's watching it, they call it the wall. You know, you don't want to get put on the wall. And Gilead uses the public hangings as a way to keep everyone in line. And same thing with the cross. So Jesus evoking the cross here is evoking the way in which the Roman Empire keeps peace through violence. And he's saying, I think, no, we're just by being about this loving God and the way God desires for us to live, we disrupt that. We say no to that way of keeping peace, because there's a deeper peace at stake. And so it's, to me, not harsh in an invitation to reject things that are a part of our lives, but more challenging in that it says, are you really in for the good trouble that we're about as a movement? Are you really in for a vision of how we live together that says, as God intends, not one is disposable, not one is excluded? And so I love this passage because of that, in a way, straight talk. Jesus is like, okay, you know, come, but you should know what's coming. We share the sermon at St. Lydia's, and we'll pause for a moment of silence, and then I'll ring the bell, and you're invited to share stories or experiences that the sermon or the scripture text evoked for you. Two invitations for how we hold the space for sharing sermons. One is, we invite you not to crosstalk, to either praise or critique what someone else has said, but just let each person's contribution stand on its own, even completely juxtaposed to what someone else might say. And secondly, if you tend to often share, consider holding back and making space. And if you aren't a person who usually shares, a special invitation to you to step in and share if you're moved to. So we begin in silence.